From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Michael Goldfarb, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. From time to time here at On Point, we like to bring together panels of ordinary people whose lives somehow are connected to the news. We've had a panel of lay Catholics to discuss the church's pedophile scandal, for example. And we had a group of 20-something MBA students who, given the current financial scandals in business, are thinking about changing their course of study. And tonight, we've convened a group of political comedians to discuss their work and in the age of Bush the Second. On Point listeners, is America today a laughing matter? Should Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld be a source of humor or a source of fear? Call 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK to join in the conversation. And joining me now in Washington is political satirist and impressionist Jim Morris. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And in Seattle, on a phone line, is Lauren Weedman, who's a correspondent for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Good evening, Lauren.
Good evening. Hey.
Hey. And somewhere in the streets of Boston looking for a parking place is Jimmy Tingle, and we hope he'll be making it any moment now. Now you understand the way I've set up the conversation, guys, but let me give you an example. Let me ask you this question. There's a story making the rounds that President Bush and Tony Blair, his ace number one main ally, actually, come on in, Jim. Come on in. We're just getting started. Yes, Jimmy Tingle, America has found a parking place.
Hello.
Hey, Jim.
Nice to see you, Michael.
and say hello to Jim Morris and Lauren Weedman.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Lauren.
Hey.
Hi, Jimmy.
And Jimmy Tingle.
You just
I apologize. John Ashcroft pulled me over on the way in here.
Somebody gave him a hot tips.
Yeah.
I was going to debut my impression of Jimmy Tingle on the air.
Okay.
Oh, well,
can you do it?
Here now.
Okay. Well, sometime during the conversation, you try it, and we'll let the listeners figure out who's the real Jimmy. Anyway, the first question is this. Look, George Bush is talking to Tony Blair, his ace number one main foreign ally. And he says to Tony Blair, you know the problem with the French economy? And Tony Blair says, no, Mr. President, what? He says, the French language doesn't even have a word for entrepreneur. Think about it. Okay. Now, the thing is...
That was Bush's response?
Now the thing is that that's being put about as a true story. Now, it may be apocryphal. But the point is, for you guys as political satirists, how do you top that?
Well, I'd just like to say Bush went to Europe and I've been to Europe and we both had the exact same reaction. Excellent country.
Excellent. And its capital is Edinburgh.
Right.
but seriously, guys, just talk over one another. I'll try and keep some kind of order here as a traffic cop. Is it at this point in time, you guys have been working at your craft for a very long time, is America actually a kind of just genuinely funnier place than it was when you started doing political comedy? Lauren.
Because I guess the more petrifying things are, the more hilarious it is. But for me, it's more like nervous giggle, you know, that it's things have gotten so much more bizarre and so much more, you know, like I was just in Amsterdam, and because I'm a I'm a prostitute, and no, I was in Amsterdam, and I was the whole time I was there, everybody was so much, oh my God, it wasn't hilarious or anything, but they were like, wow, I feel sorry for you, you know, over in America, it's really McCarthyism, huh? I feel really sorry for you. And I feel really sorry for the fact that, you know, with the Bush thing, and is it true you can't smoke pot on the streets? I think that's so sad. You know, and I was thinking at the time, like, it's so funny because on The Daily Show, of course, things have, I mean, it's not like it's gotten more hilarious, and it's just the fact that we need so much more to laugh, I guess.
You have to work harder to find a laugh, do you, Jim?
Well, I'm sitting here listening, and I can't, for the life of me, I can't find much humor in what's going on right now, because the people who have run things for many years, throughout my life anyway, have let things slip and lost sight of the important things. I was brought up in a school system where we were taught to revere the flag, and it seems like everything's falling apart at the seams right now, and to me that's not funny. So to find humor, I agree with Lauren, you have to get that nervous giggle going from the audience, and to do that, I think what I try to do is I try to pop the bubble of uncertainty and fear you know, if people can laugh at that which we have no control over, we're powerless over, there's a tension release there, and it counts as good as a laugh about drugs or sex. It's more therapeutic, I think. But it's trickier, don't you think, Jim? I mean, to make jokes about what's going on?
Yeah, I have to tell you, I mean, right after September 11th, the last thing I wanted to do was stand-up comedy, and I had some dates on the books that I had to honor, and after the show, a woman came up to me, and she said, I just have to tell you, and the show went great, by the way. It just, there was a, you know, I stayed away from most of the political humor. There was only a few weeks after the tragedy. You know, these guys were just out of bounds. They were off base for me. There wasn't anything I could do, nor wanted to really do. I felt that they had enough problems without me. But anyway, after the show, a woman came up to me, and she said, you know, I just have to tell you, I've been a flight attendant with American Airlines, and I have been to memorial service after memorial service. It was just so wonderful to be with a community of people laughing again. Please continue what you're doing. It had a great healing effect on me tonight. And when she said that, she gave me permission to be a comic again. And inadvertently, she gave the audiences permission to be audiences again. And I thanked her because she took a ton off my shoulders because I wasn't sure what the right approach was. But then I thought about it on the way home. I said, you know, I do social and political humor. And I had to question myself, is it appropriate to be satirizing the government when the nation's at war? Is that the right thing to do? I mean, a year ago, if I did a Bush joke or a Clinton joke and somebody didn't like it, hey, no big deal, entertainment. Now, treason. You see the difference? Ha ha ha! Ho ho ho!
Well, Jim, don't you find that you might have been given a green light by that one woman, but as neurotic and insecure as we comedians are, you know that there's always one or two people out there who may have a problem with you, and I'm doing what I do because I want people to like me. Since I was in grade school, put on a show and people laugh. And if I can always notice who's not laughing, and I want to work harder to get them. But in this day and age, you can't please everybody. People knew someone who might have been lost in 9/11, and you never know who you... Like one time I was doing Reagan years ago. This was the first jolt of reality I think I had. I was on stage, and I said, very innocently, I said, as Reagan, well, one thing we are going to do is make sure that we get all Americans back on their feet again. And I looked down in the front row, and there were two people in wheelchairs, and I didn't know how to recover from that. And it was innocent on my part, but there was, I think it was funnier that that happened to me, that I set a trap for myself.
Did they give you permission did they give you permission to carry on, the people in the wheelchairs? Did they laugh?
I think, well, now I know how to deal with something like that. You sort of shrug and say, hey, you know, F me, I didn't know, you know. It's an innocent thing, but when you're so careful and you make a mistake like that, you can trip yourself up, which I've done many times.
I just always try to come from sounds so like, I don't know, chakra, new agey, but I just try to be as honest about experiences as I can. Because I'm not really a joke like, ba-dum boom, the, you know, kind of joke person. But after the 11th, I went on a radio show, and it was an NPR show, so it was much more allowing in the sense that we were allowed to, you know, we could be funny, but we could also talk about, like, the reality of what was going on. And I just told stories that had happened to me. And, that's, you know, very self-absorbed and such, but it still was, it was all I had, right? And I figured if I speak from my heart and it's the truth, you know, it's my true experience, then there's not much people can, you know, give me grief about in the sense, I mean, they can, of course they can, but I can go, well, the truth is that, like, the day after it happened, or no, the day before it happened, I was walking down the street in Manhattan with my mother, and this model walked by, and my mom goes, oh, my God, forget world peace. Give me a body like that. And then on the
how old is your mother?
Yeah. And then on the 11th, at a certain point, we're in line, we're going to donate blood, and, of course, we're in the middle of hell, and then she's like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, my fault. Why did I say that? And we were, and that was like, I think it's the first thing that made me laugh. I mean, I told that story, and not as a, you know, obviously not as a, you know, get a load of this one.
Right.
But just because it was, a truth to it, I guess.
Well, Michael.
Yes, Jim.
We all have to endure. We all have to persevere. And right after the tragedy back then, I'm sure a lot of us didn't know what to say on stage, but over time we see how the government swings into action, and since we are comedians and we look at us against society or us against the government with a critical eye, I think it's important to remember that while we don't have a problem with national security, we may have a problem with how that's implemented as far as civil liberties being curbed. And so we have to keep our eyes on those who claim to protect America and nail them when we feel it's appropriate. And if the people are getting enough news, they'll know the references we're making. But in a totalitarian state, we wouldn't be able to do this because nobody would be able to see past Ashcroft's actions and look at what he may have said over the decades as far as his personal agenda goes. And there's a lot of material out there. It's just
it's just a question of how you work towards it. Now, Jimmy, I mean, you write a lot of your material. I mean,
yeah.
All of you guys write rather than freelancing and improvising when you gig?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, as you approach your writing, I mean, how are you finding out when you try material out what is working?
Well, there's no way to really find out until you do it, really. I like what Lauren was just talking about, being authentic, you know, and being authentic in how you're approaching the material. For example, I mean, I tell people the story about the American Airlines. I tell people, you know, I'm a lifelong Democrat. You know, I, at various times I voted for Bill Clinton, Al Gore, Walter Mondale, Geraldine Ferraro, Mike Dukakis, Jerry Brown, Ralph Nader. Wait a second. Who else lost? Let me just get this right. Oh, yeah. And Jimmy Carter, twice. All of a sudden, on September 12th, I found myself praying for Bush. Oh, Lord, I beg of you, Lord. I pray the president just does your will. Whatever your will is, God, I don't want to tell you how to do your job. I have one suggestion. Please, God, don't let him say crusades again in public. And I pray, Lord, for the entire cabinet. I pray for Colin Powell, Lord. I pray for Donald Rumsfeld, Lord. I pray for John Ashcroft, Lord. He's probably listening. And I pray, Lord, for Dick Cheney, wherever he may be.
He's calling you right now. Who is that? Is that you?
No.
Whose phone is that?
Oh, I think my wife wants to be on national radio.
That's Ashcroft.
I'm telling you, the tips groups are out tonight. Okay.
But, I mean, the authenticity, I mean, just coming from a place of, you know, being honest, trying to be honest with people and trying to say, you know what, this is tough for all of us.
But when you try out a routine like that, I mean, where is the laughter different these days?
The first time I did, I mean, the first benefit I did after September 11th was for the Red Cross. It was for, it was at a Passim's Folk Club in Cambridge, probably the most alternative audience you could possibly find in the world, and certainly in America. And I did a Bush joke, and it was complete silence. It was and the message was, please, we know it's bad for everyone. Don't remind us. Don't rub it in. We can't laugh at that at this point. You know, and that was like the message. And since then, I mean, people have lightened up and been able to come around, especially since there's a lack of criticism by the people who normally are critical. And so when they aren't, it's sort of our job, in a sense, to do what we can and still be true to ourselves and true to our craft and also take into consideration the circumstances.
Lauren.
Yeah.
Is the laughter sounding different to you when you do stand-up?
Well, I don't do stand-up.
At all. You're just doing John's show.
Yeah, pretty much. When I'm doing anything that's really political, I'm it's something that's pre-taped, you know. And when I did, after the 11th, we were doing, I ended up doing, my first story I did as a correspondent was a parody on that show Wild On, which is, you know, where they have, like, a girl in a bikini doing, like, a travel documentary about where to party in the world. And I did one in Amish country. And that was the only thing that we could come up with, because we were trying to stay so far away from anything political until, like, Letterman did something or Leno started to do something. And everybody was so freaked out. I mean, even I was just in L.A. the other day, and there was I saw Sarah Silverman do her stand-up thing, and she has a joke about how the 11th was such a big day for her because not only what happened, but she also found out that day that, like, there's 850 calories in a Frappuccino. And the audience was like there was a pause. And even I'm all about, like, I was so angry about the Bill Maher thing, and people should be allowed to, you know, my God, it's America. Let's hopefully not go so backwards on ourselves. And when she did that, I was like, oh, ow.
Okay, well, we all feel your pain out there, Lauren. We're coming up to the break, and we'll be back with my three comic friends. This is On Point. I'm Michael Goldfarb. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with three professional comedians who do political humor mostly. We're talking about in weird times, and believe me, we're living through weird times where reality is itself sometimes almost satirical, how political humor has to fight to get heard. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK is the number to join in the conversation with Jimmy Tingle, who's with me here in the studio in Boston, Jim Morris, who's in Washington, D.C., and Lauren Weidman of The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, who's out in Seattle. And Lauren was just talking just before the break about actually being on the receiving end of humor that just wasn't working. And I just wanted to pick up on the notion that because you don't work to a live audience, how do you know exactly where you can pitch your stuff?
Well, you watch John's face. I mean, basically, you go on his comfort level on whoever's the person where, you know what I mean? Like, people had lost relatives who work on The Daily Show. So that was an added element. I mean, that was the added element of being in New York, is that you always had to count on the fact that somebody not only had been living there, but was directly, you know, really affected. So I don't know. We just sort of ease. It's like the shock of any like grief process. When we started feeling like, oh, okay, I can eat food and it actually digests, and I feel like, you know, I'm not just, you know, my digestion is back. Therefore, I guess we can make jokes now. Like, we all had to just get ourselves back out of shock, I think. And when it all came. And it happened pretty organically. You know?
Okay, but let's just move the thing along a bit. I mean, we went through a period, and the entire autumn was taken up with both shock, grief, horror, and then the war against Al Qaeda and the Taliban. But you know, it's August now, and we've seen things since then. And this is one of the reasons that I convened this panel, is that. It does. I mean, there are just things now that are just so odd. And I'm just wondering if you can talk about what's going on in the present moment. Jimmy.
Well, sure. First of all, when Laura was talking about doing television, it is much different doing television than it is stand-up in a club, or in my case, a theater, or in Jim's case, a live performance, because there are no editors there. You basically, if the joke doesn't go over, the onus is on you when you're alone. When it doesn't go over in television, there are letters, there are emails, there are threats, it's a much bigger deal. So I think it just by virtue of the medium, they got to be a lot more careful. The stakes are a lot higher. Personally, I'm just commenting on what's going on in the news. Everybody knows about September 11th, you know, but there are things that are happening every day in the country that, you know, deserve to be satirized. WorldCom, Enron, these people, corporate scandals, just, you know, the whole idea. I mean, the Middle East, the Bush not getting involved in the Middle East for like a year. Okay, the place is deteriorated. It's horrible. He sends Colin Powell over there. I mean, this deck is obviously stacked against him. He goes over there. He's basically saying to the Israelis and the Palestinians, listen, we want you people to stop fighting, come together, make peace, and help us to invade Iraq.
Jim, what you imitating President Bush at the moment?
Not at the moment. I'm speaking as myself. it's very tricky. I'll give you a hint how I deal with it on stage. Remember the campaign of 2000? Remember how silly it was? As most presidential elections are, they're very silly. And his father dealt with Michael Dukakis, and family values was – there always seems to be a theme. Now, I'll tell you something. It's easy for me to – bring the audience back in time and do a debate between Gore and Bush. And that way I can get all my silly, goofy Bush is an idiot jokes out of the way. And whenever I do Bush in present day, I do him more somber and a little more responsibly. So I'm able to take what actually occurred before his inauguration.
Is there a place for responsibility in telling a joke?
Well, you have to be true to yourself.
No. But I mean, if you're doing him more responsibly, do you lose something that's funny?
Well, that's a really good question. But the thing is, I, as an individual, as a human being, hurt terribly, and I have three kids, and I fear for them. And maybe I'm in a mode right now where I'm still taking it all in, and any humor I come from when I'm doing Bush comes from his. I mean, everybody has foibles and quirks and mannerisms that are can be lampooned. I'll take issue with that. But of course, now with the Enron and Harkin and Halliburton and everything, hey, that's a valid issue to get him on. And so I will go after him with that. But as far as our national defenses, I'm dumbfounded. I'm able to rely on older material and newer material that, let me put it a different way, the audience has a lot at stake with this president. The audience, so the tension level rises when I do an impression of him, and the stakes are raised. And the thing is, we all want to know. People appreciate it. I mean, it's a good impression without being nasty to the man, and that's a change for me because I always tend to really go after the jugular.
Jimmy, I never think of you, Jimmy, as being a jugular kind of guy.
I appreciate it. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say here, is that we have to, I'm going to appeal to your better angels, darker impulses. God bless America.
Keep going, man. That's good.
Like, more.
No, you're not going to give it away for free, Jim. I understand. But that is really very, very good. I actually
see that. It just hurts. That's all. It hurts.
It hurts you.
Everything that, yeah, because to do an impression really well, I have to become the person, feel the person, really, really get into character. And I'm still dazed by what. Then again, I am playing somewhat of a dazed character in George W. Bush. My wife says, look at the way he's like, slowly putting his words together. I say that's because he's trying to remember what he learned at the briefing in the morning. And he is a very quick study. Don't you guys agree? He's a very quick study.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing a really good job. But, you know, before a crisis hits, he doesn't know much about a particular issue until it's on his desk.
I remember the day that we first made a joke about, it was something stupid, like making fun of a jacket that the president had on or something. And the relief of that, the fact that it felt like that was the biggest sign that everything's going to be okay because we can mock him now. I mean, that means that we're not, you know what I mean, that we don't constantly have to, you know, every time, that we're allowed to be cynical and we're allowed to be, I guess, Americans, you know, and voice our opinions on this. I mean, that was, I think that's pretty vital.
I was just going to say, Lauren, I'm going to be a uniter, not a divider. I am a uniter. I'm a joker. I'm a smoker.
You're talking right to me.
I'm a midnight toker. I think I saw you over there at one of those coffee shops in Amsterdam.
Oh, great. I'm like the pot-smoking whore now. That's great. I'm taking that role in the group. That's okay. That's so exciting. It was like he was talking right to me, you guys.
But it is interesting about, once again, you can go after the policy of the administration. For example, that's great about what Jim was saying. He said during the campaign he's a uniter, not a divider. And 9 months into the administration, his environmental policies upset the Europeans, the Japanese, and the Canadians. His Star Wars policies upset the Russians, the Chinese, and the North Koreans. Within 9 months, this man had been able to bring together Russia, China, North Korea, Europe, Canada, and Japan against us. The man was a miracle worker. He did in 9 months what 70 years of communism could not do. He united Russia and China.
See, that's good. That's good. That's good.
I mean, it's about policies. I mean, but I'm like you guys. I mean, I got to think about what I do, and I try to be authentic about where I'm coming from with the audience. Because I do, you know, Bush is a born-again Christian, and that meant a lot to me. I mean, I grew up Catholic, and I have a religious side to me. And when I found out he was a born-again Christian, I said, this little voice in my head goes, Jim, how do you know? You better watch what you say about the president. How do you know God has not chosen President Bush to be the leader of this nation at exactly this time in our history? And if Bush says something really outrageous or funny, like he knocked himself unconscious with a pretzel, you know, that could be God's way of trying to trick the enemy. You know, Taliban sitting in a cave watching CNN. What's a pretzel?
Yeah.
Where can we get some?
On Point listeners, take a laugh break. We're talking with three of America's best political comedians, and we're talking about regaining a foothold with their way of earning a living over the last 10 months. If you have any questions for them, I think they are more than capable of handling any questions from anyone. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Amy is on the line.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Amy.
Let's see. One of the things I wanted to say is to reinforce the notion that the jester is the truth teller in our society, and that particularly around George Bush, that it's okay to tell the truth about his inability to use language appropriately and his incompetence in various, you know, matters of state. I just want to reinforce that. Another point I wanted to make is that black humor, not in the sense of racial, but in the sense of dark humor, is a really important survival mechanism. And I've used it a lot in various aspects of my working and professional life. Particularly, I'm thinking of when I worked doing domestic violence, helping people get restraining orders. We had a file of people who had restraining orders taken out against them. We called it the dream date file. So, you know, that kind of black humor was something that we used to keep it from getting too heavy. Also, Jim had mentioned dealing with a person with a disability.
This is Jim Morris.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to just say that probably the best comeback to that situation would have been for him to stay in the Reagan persona and to say, well, yes, except for you people, because we don't want you people, which is such, you know, it's a very typical of the way Reagan dealt with disability issues.
And you have a personal experience of that.
Yeah, I'm a person with a disability, so I have to deal with that kind of stuff all the time. And I just wanted to ask Jimmy Tingle if he's yet felt ready to take on the Catholic Church around the sexual abuse issues.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, people say to me, okay, Mr. Catholic, come on, you're a big Catholic. What, how could 1,500 priests be, you know, accused of child molestation around the country, huh? What's the story, huh? I don't know what to tell them. I say, it's a mystery. One of the many mysteries of the faith.
Well, I can tell you this. All kidding aside, I think the Catholic Church, they want to... And I think they're pretty much holding their own right now, which is a big improvement over the way they were conducting themselves. They want to put it in their past. Put it in their past.
Well, I mean, one of the things, I mean, you mentioned the church. I mean, these are issues that all stem. I mean, it's social commentary / political humor. But, I mean, this is a great opportunity to talk about, you know, how the church can broaden itself and look at itself. And what about the role of women in the church? I mean, why can't they start ordaining nuns? I mean, you never see the nuns embroiled in these sex scandals. You know, you never hear about the nuns trying to, you know, get the hockey team drunk. You know, come on up to the rectory and see me, you know, after the game. You know, you don't see this. I mean, it's always the men, you know. It's always the men. I mean, Mother Teresa dedicated her entire life to serving God and other people. She won a Nobel Peace Prize, yet because of her gender, she could never, ever, ever become a Catholic priest. Yet theoretically, I could. Now, I ask you, if you had to seek out spiritual guidance, who would you rather talk to, Mother Teresa or me?
Well, Jim, you're sitting right here. I don't know. I've read Christopher Hitchens on Mother Teresa, so I may actually.
She's supposed to be kind of bossy.
Yeah.
Not as sweet as she seems. Yeah.
Yeah.
I picked Jimmy.
Yeah. Actually, Jim,
bless you.
Thank you, Jim. 800-423. Amy, thank you for your call and your comments. 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. Peter is on the line.
Oh, hi. What I hear is a bunch of liberal comedians casting about in panic because they're trying to make fun of somebody they genuinely don't like and respect. It was easy with Clinton because they liked him. They thought he was a bright guy, which he is, and entertaining, which he turned out to be. But here with Bush, there's a panic. I sense a flop sweat here in the room.
Oh, I don't know about that, Peter. I think Jim Morris has been exceptionally honest in talking about his difficulties as an impressionist in working through, you know, his routines with the president.
Michael, take last night's Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Now, I happen to love that show, But John just died last night. He was making fun of Bush unsuccessfully. I mean, I was embarrassed for him. I know he's a liberal, but my gosh.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Jim Morris, go ahead.
Sure. Sorry, Jim Morris says to the caller, what gives you the right to put labels on us? I mean, you have no idea whether I'm a liberal, and you have no idea, and I'm going to tell you right now that Bill Clinton was probably the worst thing that ever happened in my career. It became a one-joke deal.
Kind of like Von Meter after JFK was shot.
No. JFK couldn't rehabilitate himself after he was shot, but Clinton chose not to rehabilitate himself. Okay, it was two jokes. It was lying and it was the sex. And, you know, where do you go for humor when all day long people hear on the news, that's all they hear, so they don't get your reference points if you're going to do intelligent humor beyond that.
But Michael started this show it sounded like a panic, as though comedians are being put into concentration camps now. He talked about the fear of the country now.
I've got my scripts in front of me, Peter, and I never use concentration camp at all unless I'm describing like
it's
a concentration camp
bad.
In the Balkans or being at Auschwitz.
I've been freaked out and scared the whole time, and I've been crying.
Okay.
You've heard me. I've been absolutely freaked out and peeing myself beside myself with like, how am I? My only fear these days is that I just don't know enough. And I'm not going to know enough to make intelligent enough comments about it or to joke intelligently about it. I'm a huge milquetoast liberal. I definitely am. I can admit to that. But I'm always, as I said, my only fear is that I don't understand everything and I'm going to say something that's going to make the whole room go like, oh my God, did you not read page 5 of the blah, blah, you know. That's my only real fear I'm dealing with these days.
And since we're all on the defensive, briefly from Peter, just to say, what I actually had asked Peter is we always ask a question to solicit calls, and we got yours. But I said, should Donald Rumsfeld be a source of humor or a source of fear? And I think that's a reasonable question. And let me throw that to Jimmy Tingle. I mean, somebody like the Secretary of Defense, I mean, during the war, the BBC ran a Rummy of the Week, which was the most outlandish quote from one of the briefings, because they do seem outlandish, especially taken out of context. And you do wonder, I mean, is he a source of humor or is he, because of the power he wields, someone to be feared?
No, he's a source of humor if you can come up with something good on him.
You come up with something good on him?
Just in the fact that, you know, not so much on him, to tell you the truth, personally. Unfortunately, I think the audiences have to really know who you're talking about all the time, and most people do, but a lot of people don't. It's not like a Bush. It's, you know, when you're doing this type of humor, the thing about it is you're trying to elicit laughter, and the audience has to be educated, and not all the audiences are. So I'm not really that focused on Rumsfeld. I'm more focused on the policies, but he is part of the administration, so when you're talking about the administration, you can be talking about him. But you have to understand, people, you know, it is difficult in a time of war, people are afraid to address it, but that doesn't necessarily have to stop people. I mean, you got to be honest with yourself. If you come up with something, there's no reason to hold back. If you don't come up with anything, well, that's fine.
We're coming up to another break, and after the break, we'll be back with our three political comedians, Jimmy Tingle, with me here in Boston, Jim Morris in Washington, D.C., Lauren Weidman in Seattle, Washington. And we can take some more of your calls, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, to join in the conversation. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is On Point. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is On Point. We're talking with some political comedians this hour about their work, their craft, especially in the current new climate that we all live in. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK to join in the conversation. Mark is calling from Manitowoc, Wisconsin.
Hello?
Mark.
Hi, I'm just calling about earlier on in the program we were discussing Bush's intelligence level.
Yes.
And, well, I recently found out that there's two words that he made up himself. One of them is misunderestimated, and the other one is Hispanically. I don't know exactly which context he uses these words under, but
Hispanically speaking.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if Oscar Huelos used that in one of his novels, we'd all be thinking, yeah, well, that's okay. I can dig where Oscar's coming from.
Well, that goes back to your first question, your premise. Is it Is it funny? Is reality funny? Too funny to make jokes about? I mean, if you were to do that, Hispanically speaking, people would laugh and discount it as a comedian's device. And on the one hand, it helps me because I can just go to town with, you know, with malapropisms. But on the other hand, he really said it, folks. No. He really said this, folks. And if you have to stop and explain to the audience, it's like this program. It's not as funny as it could be as if we just did shtick, you know. It's like we're dealing with some terrible topics, but I know it's funny, so I'll do it on stage. Like the anthrax thing happens, and I come out, excuse me, if I can... if I can indulge in this as an example of what I thought was funny, and I did it anyway.
Good evening. This is the NBC Nightly News with Tom Brokaw. I received an envelope filled with anthrax, and the good news is that they didn't send me something I couldn't pronounce. At least I didn't get Ebola or Salmonella.
You know, and that makes me laugh, so I do that kind of stuff, and... I see. You had to be there in the room.
Jim, but you know what's frightening about the anthrax scare? They actually think, the law enforcement thinks the anthrax terrorists might be Americans. And one of the reasons they think this is because some of the words on some of those notes were misspelled. Those are our people. Those are our right-wing fanatics.
I could just imagine... years ago, the President Bush took his son aside, George W., and said, "One day, son, this will all be yours." And now he's in a position where he's advising his son. You know that has to happen. Geez, Dad, how do you think I'm doing? Oh, you're doing pretty good. We still get people dying in Bosnia-Herzegovina, but I tell you this. Now, listen, you got to stick to the script at your press conferences. You're doing a good job, but when you go off script there and you mangle words, and people are going to think you were, you don't finish, people are going to think you were brought up by someone who couldn't finish a complete sentence. But I'll tell you this. You're doing a good job.
Okay, so...
My friend, Mr. Heston, made an announcement today that he's joining the ranks. And,
you see, is it okay to... No, it's not okay to make fun of Alzheimer's disease. But...
You'll do this it.
But get this.
You're an entertainer, Jim. Go for it. They're not in wheelchairs. Go ahead.
The time. I'm sorry. I was going to do another joke, but it's just...
No, go ahead. No,
do you mind?
Do your joke, and then I'm going to go to Lauren, and she can do a joke, and the Jimmy Tingle can do a joke, and we'll do one more.
Okay. Thank you. This is a... and I'll get my fix. That's great. This is an example of what I did. Is I was driving down the Pacific Coast Highway with the mountains. No, I was driving down the West Side Highway to do a show in New York at a theater. And I knew that the audience was assembled and ready for me to come in. I was running late. And I heard on the radio that Reagan released a letter saying that he was suffering from the early stages of Alzheimer's disease. So I get down there to the theater, and I'm thinking, if I do a joke about this or refer to it, most of the people will not have heard it, and they'll think I'm making a joke. So what I did was... to be very short about it, I read the letter as Reagan on stage, suffering from the early, and I thought I'd share that with you folks here tonight. And of course, I should tell you that this letter, I wrote it back in 1981. Which was my way of saying, you know, I thought that, I still think it's a valid joke. I wasn't making fun of Alzheimer's disease. I was making fun of a public who would elect a man who I thought maybe wasn't, back in 1981 he took office.
Right. Lauren, your joke.
I don't really have I mean...
Good, I'll do another one.
Go ahead.
You know how it gets. Hilarious. I know I'm really hilarious.
Okay. Well, do you work better with questions rather than just a demand for humor?
I was just thinking that because I was talking to your producer about doing political, you know, commentary and jokes and stuff. I was like, you know, I just struggle with always feeling like I'm just dumb as a brick, and I end up in a lot of I'm surrounded by really, really political people in the sense of my comedy world is sort of political satire. And the same, like right now I'm in Seattle, and the people I stay with are all incredibly like these lesbian feminists, like, you know, political, incredible people that. like this one woman I'm staying with is a big activist, and she came in, and I was like watching, I've been watching Anna Nicole Smith, you know, that her special she's got on, or her show.
Well, that's okay. Yes. Yeah.
That's the, I mean, this is the kind of stuff where I have to quickly
but
like,
you know, but that's the point of this is that, you know, America is a weird place. And the amazing thing is that Anna Nicole Smith is going to have success on E. And what will happen is that in Britain and in Germany and in France and in Japan, they will go out and find their own variation on Anna Nicole Smith.
Yeah.
And they'll completely rip off that the show's format. And this is how American culture takes over the world. And it's all part of the genuine weirdness of America, I think. So, I mean, when we talk about political, we just don't mean making, you know, Bush jokes.
And for me, I'm always, well, in defense, like what I'm defending my, you know, how I'm recovering, I'm always like, well, I need this in order to be a better American. I need to, like, be distracted. Like, I was in New York every time I was always in recovery. You know, we were always have to have one more drink or have to have one more because of the 11th and because of, you know, it was always my way of well, this is what I'm doing as an American is trying to get over irritable bowel syndrome, because I know if I do that I can think clear and I can become more, you know, in touch with what's going on, and I will listen better, and I'll, you know, whatever, you know, I'm just not as...
Oh, that's what I've been trying to do with this, the Congress, trying to eliminate waste. They're trying to control our defecates.
Defecate humor. I love it.
You guys, I tell you something. You know, I think you're being a little unfair, okay? Because Bush, I got to tell you, Bush has surprised people right from the – he surprised me right from the beginning because, for example, in the whole country, let's be honest, he only got about 9 black votes, okay, in the whole country. And 2 are now in the cabinet. So what he did, he created the most racially diverse cabinet since Clinton. Of course, it's Republican diversity. See, it's a little different. It's sort of like a rainbow corporation. Now, what I try to do is actually look at the situation, look at the administration, and I always feel like from the beginning, before September 11th, that gentleman called saying we're all nervous. The only thing we were nervous about is people died in the country. 3,000 people died. And if it wasn't for that, people would be all over Bush, both the Congress and the Senate and the voters, really. But everybody's hands off because they empathize with him. That's why he's at 70%. But anyway, but it's the whole idea of, for example, the UN policy last week or 2 weeks ago, they voted to they don't want to contribute to the United Nations Population Fund because, among other things, they don't want sex education and condoms and birth control being taught to the third world. They want the third world to rely on abstinence. And, you know, abstinence is a wonderful thing. And, you know, it probably is the most effective way to stop AIDS and unwanted pregnancies and the spread of disease. However, if it didn't work with Bill Clinton, Bob Packwood, Gary Condit, Jesse Jackson and Rudolph Giuliani, how is it possibly going to work with teenagers in Africa?
800-423-8255.
I can't believe this, Michael. You are going to take another call. I can't believe you're going to take another call. I just want to say one thing.
Go ahead, Jim.
My lovely wife, my wife Hillary, is now in Washington, D.C. doing the work of the people. And whatever you may have thought of my administration, I want you to remember one thing, and that is I kept every promise I intended to keep.
Mr. President, may I go to one last call, please, sir?
It's your prerogative. It's your show.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Bob is on the line. Bob?
Oh, yeah. Hi. I just want to make one point. You guys as comedians really have a tough job because we're the only country in the whole history of the world who suffered a domestic tragedy. And to try to deal with that with a population such as ours, with no sense of irony, and kid gloves in terms of the administration. I have a friend who went out this week to California to see where his father was interned as a Japanese during World War II. I don't think there is, from what I see, much bite at all in our comedy. And if you go to Europe, it's an entirely different scene. I'll turn my radio on and listen to what you might have to these reflections.
Jimmy
sure.
Tingle.
I mean, he makes a good point. People are a little uptight about it. There's no doubt about it. And the point's well taken that the problems in the United States oftentimes pale in comparison to most of the world, especially, obviously, the third world, which is the majority of people on this planet, where 40,000 people starve to death every year and all this sort of thing. Everybody knows that. But, I mean, just look at the word terrorism. I looked up terrorism in the dictionary. What is terrorism? According to Webster, terrorism is the use of force or violence by one group of people to influence the behavior of another group of people or government to do that group's or government's will. Well, under that definition, there are about 40 or 50 wars going on in the world right now. Under that definition, both sides of every conflict could be susceptible to charges of terrorism. I mean, if it's a terrorist act to bring a bomb into a building and kill innocent civilians, why is it never considered a terrorist act to throw a bomb out of a plane onto a building and kill innocent civilians? So I think Webster's definition is clear. I think what we all have to do is take a deep breath, take a step back, and stop looking up words in the dictionary.
But Jim,
this is not a time for reflection.
When you try something out like that in the suburbs of Boston, yeah. Does it go down with the same effect as that bomb coming out of a B-52?
You got to put it in the right place in the show. You know, you really do.
Not at the beginning, presumably.
No, you just have to time it correctly, because that's what people are thinking. It's our job. We're privileged to be on stage. It's one of the last bastions of free speech. When I'm alone on stage in a theater, I can do material I could never do in 60 Minutes when I was there. I could never do on television. I couldn't do if I had my own radio. Well, I never had my own radio show, so I can't say it for radio. But it's an incredible privilege. And so I just work really hard at trying to get to the truth of the matter. And I love policy over personal attacks anytime. And, you know, that's what I try to shoot for.
Yeah, the last caller was talking about irony deficiency and what vitamins you guys can offer to correct that deficiency. We are coming to the end of the hour. And frankly, I don't know what to ask next, which is kind of a postmodern way of...
Lauren, ask me a question.
Come on. Guys, jump in, all right? One last question from Lauren to Jim Morris.
Oh, a question from me to Jim?
Please.
Okay.
Well, I'm tall. I have dark hair.
But we know you're married.
Very handsome, Lauren.
Yeah, but you're married. You've got three kids. You already confessed that. Or were you lying?
But I can be someone else. I can be Dan Rather.
Go ahead.
I can be Dan Rather, and we could perhaps go and determine the frequency of our rendezvous.
Do you do any females?
Well, I told you I wasn't going to answer those kind of questions. I used to do Julia Child, and I did Margaret Thatcher, but no. I do a John Stewart, but I don't think we have time for that.
Oh, I would love. That would be great.
It's more of a visual thing anyway. He's got some great takes, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Take. What do you call that? His reaction? His takes.
Reaction shot.
Reaction shot. Yeah. Carson had the best, you know. Carson would do a joke and it would fall flat and he'd just look at the crowd. May your only daughter receive a pap smear from Roman Polanski. Anyway.
You got to get the pencil
down. I don't know. What's Jay Leno doing nowadays? Jimmy, you going to come on the show with me?
Jay, they were up against the same thing. Jay pulled out a big stack of papers on one show and said, see this? This is all the Bush jokes I cannot do.
Right.
It was like in the first month or so of it. But, you know, it was interesting. One of the first things that changed was Bush changed. You know, he changed after seven. He went from a kind of a national joke in many respects to this, you know, inspiring leader. When he came on national television the first time, he said, I am declaring a war on terrorism and states that sponsor him. I said, whoa. I called all my Irish friends and relatives. I said, listen, you guys got to quit sending money to Northern Ireland. Bush is going to level the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Jimmy Tingle, thank you very much, Jimmy Tingle. Tingle's appearing August 23rd at Cape Cod Community College. Lauren Weidman in Seattle, thank you very much. You can catch her on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Jim Morris in Washington, D.C., you said you didn't have a gig for me to plug? Man, you should be gigging everywhere around the United States. You're great. Thanks. I'm Michael Goldfarb. This is On Point.
This is W.